This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. I want to let you know the first part of the show is brought to you by At Home Care. And that's Melissa Warren's business. And she decided that there were a certain group of people that were seen to be left out. And those are the people that had gotten older or maybe had been disabled and were no longer taking care of the home duties that they were used to. And what she did is she established a business that goes in 24/7 and takes care of all those functions for them. And also they run errands and just make sure that you're able to stay there without all of those responsibilities hanging over your head. And if this interests you, call 713-4639 or pull them up on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. Or you can go over to her place of business, 237 Castlewood Drive, Suite H, right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And I'll guarantee you, if you'll just make that effort, it'll make your life a whole lot better. I have a very, very interesting gentleman on today, Matt Ward, who has done just about everything. He has taught in school. He is very much inclined toward music. And also toward poetry, and I let Melissa, when we came in, I told her that you were a bard, and I don't think she kind of felt comfortable with me calling you a bard, but I think it fits. You're kind of like our Rutherford County Shakespeare.
Jerry Gaither likes to call me the poet laureate of East Maine. That's about as far as I could extend with it.
Now, that fits in pretty good. Of course, you have written four books, and we're going to get into those books a little bit later on. But kind of give us a little background on how you got here, Matt, as far as your working in the school systems and some of the things that, and also in real estate. I mean, you've pretty much covered the gamut.
Okay, well, a quick bio. I was born in or near Mount Pleasant, Tennessee, and lived until I was eight there, and then moved to Nashville and went to high school at Antioch High School, graduated there in 61, came here in 61 and went to MTSU and majored in music and became a band director, teaching 2 years in Springfield, Tennessee, 7 years in Lancaster, Ohio, and then came back and taught 6 years at MTSU in the music department. And then left the music field and went into real estate and sold real estate for 25 years. 25 of them, I believe, with Bob Parks Realty. There was 1 year prior to joining him and retired about 6 years ago now. And when I retired, that's what gave me time to start writing. So all of these books that I brought in are products of the last 6 years.
Now, the books that you have written, are these the things that are interest to you, such as music? And another thing that I find really interesting, because you let me have one of your books, and I took it to Florida with me to read. And it was... you could tell by the way that you have written it some of the things that have maybe led you toward that end. I mean, you even talk about growing up and being in your home, and that was really interesting, the way that the emotions that you felt about growing up.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that. The book cover itself says that about half of the poems, essays, and short stories, as its subtitle suggests, are sentimental in nature, and the other half are humorous. So we've got several stories, most of which are true. When you say short story, that doesn't require something to be true, and maybe one or two of them are fiction, but most of them are true. And then the poems, a lot of them are inspired by things that inspire me here in Murfreesboro. One of them, a little old man with his dog on East Main Street, which I actually observed and watched him many times walking his dog, and I wrote a poem about that.
What gives you the incentive to see things and then put them into writing in such a colorful way? Because it's so interesting to read. It's almost like climbing into your mind and seeing what your thoughts are.
I don't know. I actually express myself better in writing than I do in person. Mm-hmm. I guess for one thing, I have the time to wait and think of just the right word. If I don't know it, I can look it up. Mm-hmm. So that's inspiring. And one of the things that encouraged me in writing, and although I said I put these books out in the last 6 years, that book you're talking about, The Universal Prescription, The Hug, is a compilation of things I've written over the past 30 years. Mm-hmm. Now, think of what major writing instrument started becoming fairly common in homes about 30 years ago. The computer.
Mm-hmm.
And that...
It wasn't common in my house.
Well, we got our first one. It was just a... Commodore 64, and the most it would hold would be a floppy disk, and you could probably get maybe the equivalent of 20 pages of written text on it, I guess, and yet it was so easy to, as you typed, you could back up and change something. You didn't have to just scratch it out and start all over, and within a few years, 2 or 3 years, I had a little bit better one, a Macintosh, and it had on it the spell check and the thesaurus. So if I couldn't think of the right word, I could just hit the right button and it would suggest several others for me. And those were tremendous tools. So I guess that's what encouraged me to get
into writing. Roger really did a lot for writing, didn't he?
Who?
Roger.
Oh, yeah. I had the Roger's... book, and I guess my earlier stuff, I relied on it, but...
Well, you were ahead of your time, but of course, the computers and everything like that, you seem like you love to put your ideas into print, and I have been at the City Cafe with you, where, you know, we have some very interesting people that sit over at the City Cafe, and they've got all kinds of opinions. Have you ever drawn from some of the information that you have heard there? Because I have watched you while the rest of us are over there running our mouths. You're listening, and you're actually, I'm sure, reaping a whole lot more from the conversation than we are.
I'm listening, but that reminds me of a big faux pas I made one time when someone commented that same thing about me listening instead of talking so much. And I said, well, I believe, as Abraham Lincoln said, that it's better to keep your mouth shut and be thought a fool than to open it and remove all doubt. Mm-hmm. And to prove it, someone interrupted me and said, Matt, that was Mark Twain that said that. So I learn again, keep my mouth shut.
Now, in the book, and it's universal, and of course it's the RX, the hug. Why did you split it into halves? Because you got one part that is very serious and very emotional, and some of it is very personal with you. Yeah. And then you've got the fun part where you kind of have to use your own imagination.
I did debate between whether to do it that way or to intermix them like comic relief between some of the heavier ones, more emotional ones. And yet I decided that some of the serious ones were so serious to me that it seemed frivolous to put something funny right after it. So that's why I split it up into the serious and the humorous, and we used those old drama faces to split those two categories. There's one poem that occurs in both of them because to me it's both serious and humorous, and that's the one that is the namesake of the book.
Okay.
The Universal RX, mm-hmm. The Hug. That poem I wrote several years ago and first appeared in print in the Chicken Soup for the Soul, mm-hmm. books. Are you familiar with
right.
them?
Right, yes, I am.
Well, they accepted that one and published it, and because of that, it became pretty well known. It's been reprinted. I think they reprinted their book in many languages, mm-hmm. and I have seen it on the internet. Just Googling that title, mm-hmm. I have found it in languages I couldn't even recognize. It wasn't even the Roman alphabet. I don't know if it was Arabic or what, but it would have in English at the top the mm-hmm. Universal RX, the Hug, and my name spelled correctly, and then it would be a bunch of gibberish as far as I could tell as to what they had transliterated it, but it has developed a bit of notoriety, so I thought I would piggyback off of that and name the book that. And because that particular poem is both serious and humorous, I put it at the beginning of both sections.
And that's hard to do, is to write a poem that's emotionally kind of carries you down a little bit, but on the other side, it lifts you up. And when we talk about Chicken Soup for the Soul, I mean, that's pretty much self-explanatory. I mean, you're reading something mm-hmm. that's supposed to make you feel good and, mm-hmm. and uplift you. And I have to admit, some of the when we had the first part of it, some of it got me a little down while I was reading it. Uh-huh. I was not exactly enjoying it emotionally like I did as I got on, but some of your poems are complicated. They really are. They're not simple mm-hmm. poems. Now, how do you get into that?
Well, in the very first few poems, I actually took one theme and wrote it in the style of several different poets.
Mm-hmm.
And my foreword explains that I just wanted to show people that if I wrote something in a rhyming scheme and in a simple rhyming scheme.
And there are different
scheme,
types of poetry that you actually put uh-huh. your pen to.
Yes. But I wanted to show them that I'm using that particular style on that poem because that's what I like. Not because I'm incapable of writing it in some more sophisticated mm-hmm. style. So I did several poems based on the same theme in various styles and said this one is how Shakespeare would have written it, and this one is how William Blake would have written it, and how Khalil Gibran would have written it. Then because it seems that rhyming poetry has fallen out of favor for so long, it was sort of a defense of rhyming poetry because that's the kind I like the most. Not that everything I wrote in this book is rhyming poetry, mm-hmm. but most of my poems are.
Do you like the ode version of poetry? Ode.
Old?
Ode, O-D-E.
Ode. I did four or five of them. That's mm-hmm. something that makes a tribute to
right.
someone or something. And yeah.
I kind of like that, especially some of the old-time poets. But in your childhood, was there anything that you felt that would have led you to this? Was there anything as far as poetry or music and those type things? Because you had an interesting way to look at your childhood.
No, I can't think of anything in my childhood that would have made me predict that I'm going to do something like this mm-hmm. later on. I do remember one incident in high school when we were required to write a poem mm-hmm. that I wrote one, and I don't have it anymore. I don't know what happened to mm-hmm. it. Don't remember anything about it. But I do remember that the teacher asked me, "Did you really write that?" So,
and
I
you
guess
did?
Yeah, I did. And I guess that they thought it looked a little better than what they had me pegged as being capable of.
I want you to know that I think I was in the fourth grade, and we had to turn in a poem, and I got the best poem. My mom wrote it for me.
Oh.
And she was always so proud of that poem. She really was. I couldn't see me writing anything like that because I had no imagination as a child. Absolutely none.
Well, I have a granddaughter that's won a couple of that kind of contests and had her poem published in some book and along with a lot of other students, and just won again this year. She's in, I think, seventh grade this year, and just in the last couple of weeks told me that she'd won one of those again. So I hope if I have any poetic talent that it's been passed on to her.
You do, and I do want people to know that Universal RX, The Hug, and it's written by Henry Matthew Ward.
I figured Henry Wadsworth Longfellow cashed in on that, so I'd just try it. That's my full name, although I go by my middle name, Matthew, and more commonly Matt.
And they can pick these books up. We're going to get into some more. But where can they buy these books at?
Well, Hastings was carrying it, and I haven't been over there in a while to see if they still have them or not. But probably the easiest way is Amazon.com. Mm-hmm. They're available there, and you just click on a button, and it's mailed right to you. Let me think. City Cafe has some of mine because I'm there all the time.
Do they get a finder's fee on it?
Yeah, I consign them. So if there's anybody else in town that thinks they might have a market for this, I'd love to place them on consignment. They don't have to pay me anything in their shops, and we'll split it. I just asked someone at the hospital, you know, they have a gift shop at the hospital, if they would allow me to put my book there, because it seems somewhat appropriate, universal prescription, and if they're looking to take something up to a patient there, maybe that would be the appropriate thing to take. I haven't heard back from them yet.
I tell you what, it's a great read. It really is. I really enjoyed it. And you have another book that you have written that's more in the history line, and I believe it's about Mr. Mooney.
Yes, the name of this book is W.D. Mooney, Master Headmaster. He was educated at the Webb School, and this is way back in the 1800s. Right after the Civil War would be about the time that he entered. And at that time, I learned this in the research for this book, the Webb School was not in Bellbuckle. It was in Cullioca, Tennessee. That's where Webb started the school, and Mooney, after attending there and continuing on to he went to college in what is now Austin Peay.
Okay.
But it was a Methodist or a Presbyterian school back then. I've forgotten which one, and didn't go by that name. It went by the name of Southwestern, I believe, which later moved to Memphis and became, they called it Southwestern for a while, then they changed its name to Rhodes. So he was a graduate of there and came back and taught at the Webb School in Cullioca, and that was about the time, after teaching there a year or two, that Mr. Webb, Sawney Webb, decided to move the school from Cullioca to Bellbuckle because he just didn't get along with some of the people in Cullioca and their ideas about having bars in town. He was a very anti alcohol. He was a temperance person. And so when he left, Mooney and one of the other teachers, I've forgotten his name,
I bet it's not somebody wanting to buy real estate because you're not doing that
anymore. No, I've been retired from that 6 years. He took over the school at Cullioca, and within a year or two, the people in Franklin approached him about opening a school in Franklin. This was back in the 1880s. Mm-hmm. And in that era, there were very few public high schools. So mm-hmm. anyone that wanted to go beyond, say, eighth grade would have to attend a private school. And they wanted to open one in Franklin, which they did work out a deal with Mooney and that other man that was working that Culioca school with him.
So to get a so-called an advanced education, and we're talking about high school level, it was primarily private at that time?
Yeah.
In the 1880s?
Uh-huh. Maybe some big cities would have public schools back then, but most of the Tennessee schools didn't have. Nashville might have had a few, or maybe one public high school. Trying to remember the name of that other person that he, a Wall, because they called the school the Wall and Mooney School when they opened it in Franklin, but it was chartered as the Battleground Academy, so, and which of course is still going strong. But in that era, the tradition was to, regardless of what the official name was, the tradition was to call it after the name of the headmaster, and so they called it the Wall and Mooney School. And then Wall left a couple of years later and went down to Texas and opened another school, and they called the Franklin School just the Mooney School. It burned in 1903, and Mooney, for reasons I was never able to find, decided to move his Mooney School to Murfreesboro. I do know that his mother's family was from Murfreesboro, but why he didn't want to just stay in Franklin, I don't know. So he built a school on East Main Street in 1903, which is in the 1000 block, and I happen to live in the 1000 block. I live at 1019, and directly across the street from me is a vacant lot. It's been that way since I moved there in 1974, and that's what got me interested in this. I started investigating what used to be on there. I knew something did because there was a sidewalk that led back into the lot, and found that it was the Mooney School, built there in 1903, which, again, officially its name was the Murfreesboro School for Boys. And then he lost it in about 1908 due to having co-signed a note with a friend, and the friend defaulted on the loan, so they came to him, and the only way he could make good on the loan was to sell his school. He sold it to one of the teachers, named Anderson, so the school became the Anderson School for Boys, and Mooney moved on to Harriman and opened another Mooney School there. Then he moved on to and taught at Tennessee Military Institute in, I've forgotten the East Tennessee town that is in, Sweetwater.
Okay.
And then moved on to Virginia and ultimately to Riverside Academy just north of Atlanta, where he finished up over 50 years of being a headmaster at one place or another. But back to his days in Franklin, of interest to you, was he started a football team, and this is in like 1889 or somewhere around there, and it was the first high school football team in Tennessee.
Wow.
There were no other high schools to play games with, so he played Vanderbilt. He played Cumberland.
You're a kid.
And he actually won some of those games. And most of his best players ended up playing for Vanderbilt. That Vanderbilt would just give a scholarship to practically anybody that Mooney said is worth it. They just took his word on it. In fact, several institutions of higher learning would accept a student based on his recommendation, not just for football, but as a student, including Princeton University. And one of his students became a admiral that I think is the one that went to Princeton.
Wow. Well, now, as we go along, they're mostly all private schools, and they're all boys' schools, right?
Yes.
So,
I don't think any of them were ever co-ed when he was the headmaster. Some of them later became co-ed. But of interest to Murfreesboro people is what happened to this school in Murfreesboro after he left it. And that was, again, he built it in 1903. He lost it in 1908 to Anderson. It became the Anderson School for Boys until 1911. And then Anderson just evidently didn't succeed with it. And it folded and was just a vacant empty building for, I don't know, a year, 2 or 3 years. Then it became Murfreesboro Central. A lot of people, most people don't know this. It was, this is the where the empty lot is now. There's a house being built on it as we speak, but it's been an empty lot for ever since 1934. It became the first Murfreesboro Central High School.
Now, that was a public school when it became centralized.
Yes, uh-huh. Set vacant for about 3 years, and then the city of Murfreesboro bought the land and the school. And, of course, at that time, there was a big athletic field there. A lot of people will remember the athletic field. It was called the Carr Athletic Field, K-E-R-R. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, MTSU played its football games there and practiced there in 1911 when they opened up school. They didn't have their own football field.
And that's in the Thousand Block area? Is that where we're talking
about? Yes, that's between 1st and 2nd Avenue.
Wow.
And it went back about at least a couple of blocks. The entire tract was around 6 acres, I believe. But anyway, it became Central High School. Now, it was really just a two-year school. They had 9th and 10th grade. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to go to 11th and 12th, you had to go to MTSU, the normal school, which offered those last 2 years of high school.
That's fascinating.
But they added the last 2 years when they got a new superintendent at in Murfreesboro. And for 1 year, it was a four-year high school. The next year, they opened the four-year high school on Maple Street that they called Central. Mm-hmm. Most people, if you were to ask them, where was the first Murfreesboro Central High School, they'd say Maple Street. Mm-hmm. It burned in World War II or somewhere around
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's what I've always thought.
Yeah. But this one, at least for 1 year, was a four-year high school. I think it had maybe one graduate, only one fourth-year student there.
Well, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back with everybody. And we'll let you know that this portion of the show is brought to you by Pirtle and Howerton Automotive. And they're at 2006 North Main Street in Shebbleville, Tennessee. And if you're looking for a Ford, Mercury, Chevrolet, Buick, or GMC, take about a 20-minute drive. It's on just before you get into Shevel. It's on 231 South. It's on your left-hand side. And go in and talk to the nice people. They're so interested in making sure that you're able to get the vehicle that you want. And if you want to call them before you leave, it's 1-800-264-6800. Or you can pull them up on the internet, PirtleHowerton.com. And I'll guarantee you that'll be one ride you'll be glad you took. Hello, this is Truman Jones. We have a new sponsor and one that you're going to be delighted with. It's National Healthcare, National Healthcare Corporation right here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And this is where life is celebrated. Discover a different kind of care, one that ensures that you're surrounded by people who make a difference in your life. In 11 states, patients and residents feel right at home at National Healthcare Corporation's more than 130 affiliated healthcare centers and home care offices. Their family of facilities delivers exceptional rehabilitative skilled nursing and extended care in locations that are close to home and family. in line with their longtime commitment to provide a continuum of care to those who need their services at any age. And want to let you know that this is a local business started here, even though it's pretty much all through the Southeast. National Health Care, Murfreesboro, where life is celebrated.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS, the Omni Hut Restaurant in Smyrna, and AmeriCare Pest Control.
I've got pests.
AmeriCare is Rutherford County's number one choice in pest control, and it's simple to see why. After calling 893-7111, their staff came to my house 8 years ago when I had an insect problem. They looked at the situation, showed me the areas, and what they'd recommend to resolve the problem. After treatment and with quarterly checks, I'm bug, critter, and creepy crawly free. Thanks, AmeriCare.
Call the best of the best to get rid of your pest.
AmeriCare, 893-7111.
This is Friday, December the 2nd, and you need to be at First Presbyterian Church in Uptown Murfreesboro this afternoon to give the gift of life. Give blood today, 2 until 7 tonight at First Presbyterian Church. They're also having a bone marrow registry. That's so easy. All you do is come in and they take a swab of the DNA from your mouth. The Bone Marrow Registry and Red Cross Blood Drive, 2 until 7 tonight at Murfreesboro's First Presbyterian Church. That's the corner of College and Spring Streets. And Santa will be at the lighting of the Rutherford County Christmas tree at 6 o'clock tonight on the square. The Angel's Closet sale today and tomorrow over at Heaven Sent Children. Gently used children's clothing, toys, and accessories. And it all benefits this international adoption service. The Angel's Closet sale today and tomorrow at Heaven Sent Children. That's at 307 North Walnut. It's an antebellum Christmas tomorrow from 10 until 4 at the Sam Davis Home in Smyrna. There's a big band Christmas party tomorrow night from 5 until 8 at the First Cumberland Presbyterian Church on East Main in Murfreesboro. Those are Good Neighbor Events.
Now more of The Truman Show with Truman Jones on WGNS AM and FM.
With today's guest, Matt Ward.
And want to let you know that this portion of the show is brought to you by Blue Restaurant and Bar. It's located in the Jackson Heights Plaza. And they have something for everyone on their menu, from steaks, fresh seafood, pastas, salads, appetizers, and special items that are unique to Blue. They have 6 items for lunch at just $6. And enjoy their Sunday Live Jazz Brunch beginning at 10 a.m. with music from Larry Pinkerton and Avant Lane. Whether it's enjoying the courtyard at dinner, the game on the big screen TVs, or piano music Friday and Saturday evenings, there's something for everyone at Blue. Blue Restaurant and Bar, located in the Jackson Heights Plaza, and be sure to visit their website at blue-restaurant.com. That's Blue Restaurant and Bar, owners Marty Brown and Greg Pogue. Now, Matt, we're still on East Main with, I think we've gone into the high school, which is actually up to the 10th, and then finally you said that they would go over to which would be the university level and get their 11th and 12th, which is, I have never heard that before.
Yeah, right. And then they made the school across the street from me, the one that's torn down now, into a four-year high school. It was a school from 1915 to 1919. That is a public school. It's the former Mooney School for Boys. And then it sat vacant for a couple of years again. Then they used it for a Murfreesboro Grammar School. Its name was East End Grammar School. I have known some people that attended East End Grammar School. They're in their 80s, but there are a few people around, if they're in that age group, that might remember East End Grammar School.
Wow.
And then it was used, Middle Tennessee State Normal School was at that time offering some elementary schooling in their administration building, Old Main that they call it, for the benefit of the teachers that they were preparing. They needed a practice school to to practice on the students. So students were in before they built what we call the campus school.
The training school back
the
then.
The training school. Mm-hmm. They were actually still having classes for that age group so that the normal teachers could have some students to practice on. In fact, the reason they call it a normal school is explained in the book here that it comes from the French term école normale, mm-hmm. which is normal school, and was really the term was meant more like model school. Mm-hmm. Maybe they meant that this is the norm that we should try to attain. Anyway,
so there weren't any really heavy standards back then like there are now as far as what you were to teach the kids.
No, I guess not. They started building what is now the campus school called the training school, mm-hmm. finishing it in 1929. The school opened in 1929. However, at the beginning of 1929, I guess they had planned on that school being already open, and they were behind schedule, and they had committed the classrooms they were using for those elementary students to college subjects. So they had to get the elementary students out of there. They sent them over to this East End Grammar School, mm-hmm. and until the campus school was finished, East End Grammar School was also housing the training school, what we now call a campus school. And B.B. Carr, who passed away, how long, 10 years ago,
something
maybe.
Like that, right.
A lot of people knew him, and his father, who owned, he was a pharmacist, had Carr's drugstore here in town. That's who that Carr Field was named after. B.B.'s father. But B.B. went to the training school, and he remembers moving over to the East End Grammar School, and he remembers the entire school marching en masse to the campus school the day that it opened. And that was the closing again of the school, which was originally the Mooney School on East Main. But it opened yet again. It became the McFadden Elementary School for about a year. When
it's in that location.
In that location.
Wow.
Because McFadden burned.
Mm-hmm.
McFadden's
right.
had more than
right.
one fire, but one of them just put them totally out of the school.
Mm-hmm.
And they moved the students over to this old school, which was sitting vacant. And then when they got McFadden rebuilt, they moved them back again, and it sat empty again, and sat empty for several years until they tore it down in 1934, I believe it was. So there hasn't been anything on that lot since 1934. But that's what looking up this information, investigating this is what got me interested. The original intent was not to write a book,
mm-hmm.
just find out something about what was that lot, what mm-hmm. was that school that was on it. And in the process, I got so interested in the fellow that founded it that I followed his career from before he built that school to well after he finished that school. In fact, when he retired from Riverside Academy, he moved back to his home area, Middle Tennessee, moved back to Nashville,
mm-hmm.
and would tutor the football students at Vanderbilt. He still had a close association with Vanderbilt. In many of the schools, he would send his best players to Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
Red
Owens.
Owens, is it?
Red Sanders. Red Sanders.
Sanders.
Right.
I was thinking Sanders.
Right.
Was mm-hmm. one of his mm-hmm. former students that mm-hmm. Didn't he become coach at Vanderbilt later at
Did.
UCLA?
Yes, he was a very famous coach mm-hmm. back in those days.
So all of that's in the book here. I think football aficionados would find a lot of interesting things in here. The old football uniforms, when they started playing in the 1880s, his wife, Mooney's wife, and a few other ladies of the school sewed the uniforms of canvas and sewed pockets, inside pockets, in the thighs of the pants, and stuffed straw in them as the padding.
Now, one thing is really, he is so interesting. Where did he receive his education and his abilities to go in and set up all these great schools of education here?
Mooney, well, as I mentioned, he went to Webb School, and I think
that's where he started his education, was at Webb.
Yes, I think he was greatly influenced by Webb, and he had the advantage of not only studying under Webb as a student, but as a colleague when he later became a teacher at Webb School. And as
the history of education at Webb is just far reaching, because people come from all over the country to go to school at Webb, just outside of our boundaries here. That's always amazed me that they were able to reach so far out.
Yeah, Webb has a wonderful reputation.
Now, Mr. Mooney, all the things that he did, and you were talking about at Vanderbilt and things like that, he was pretty much aimed at, it seems like, more the private schools than he was the public schools. And
yes.
What was there a reason for that, or as far, of course, I know that he was building a business to a certain extent, but was there a reason that he was reaching out toward those particular people?
Well, that, I guess, is one reason that it was a business for him. But he was a public school teacher for one brief period of a few years at Danville, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
He was the principal of a high school there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the only public school that I can think of that he ever taught in. Went back to Riverside, was a military boys' school after he left Danville. I don't know, maybe just something about those that appealed more to him than the public school. There were more of them back then than there are now. There were less public schools. We were still getting to where, a lot of places just didn't have any public school beyond eighth grade.
Of course, a lot of time the kids, when they were raised back then, they worked on the farm, and when they needed them on the farm, they had to go. I mean, they couldn't stay. It's not like it is now, but as you were relating his story, we both had mentioned this earlier before we went on the air. It's almost like you're seeing the movie Mr. Chips, Goodbye Mr. Chips, because his whole life was aimed at educating the young boys.
And he was that kind of teacher to them. They, when he died, one of the newspaper writers that perhaps had a personal knowledge of the man wrote an obituary that was titled, No More Goodbye Mr. Chips. The book Goodbye Mr. Chips had just come out couple of years before Mr. Mooney died, so it was, I guess, a popular book right then. It was a bestseller in that era. The obituary, to read through it, I couldn't do it without choking up.
Now, the place that we're talking about where the school was, is there a marker of any kind that denotes the history of that particular piece of land here in Murfreesboro?
No, there's no
That's
marker.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So much has happened there, and it contributed so much. And to see that piece of land just sitting there, nothing happening.
Yeah, maybe that's something we ought to think about. As I said, there is a house being built on it right now. They just broke ground about a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a small lot in relation to what it used to be, the 6 acres I think it was that it used to occupy has been all subdivided. And this is the last bit, and just by coincidence happens to be the very footprint of the school in that lot.
What a perfect place to put a memorial of some kind there that people would know. And it would be, of course, I don't know how the homeowner would feel, mm-hmm. but, you know, I would kind of think it would be neat for me if I was building a home mm-hmm. right there to have something to tell about what happened on that piece mm-hmm. of land and how much it means to Murfreesboro, because so much of that is being lost in our history.
Mm-hmm.
And to be perfectly honest with you, I'm sure that there's people out there that may have researched some of this from the Rutherford County Historical Society, but it's something that I had never heard of before. And I've actually, I am going to read that book. And I think that there's a lot of people out there listening right now that would love to have that book.
You're talking about a marker for that. Like, there are several in town. The big brass markers that take up about 2 square feet by 2 square feet and mm-hmm. have a little explanation, like of the Union University and the house that was the, was it General Palmer, the one that has the tennis courts on East Main?
Mm-hmm.
And the one about a block over from Maine that used to be where the sports writer, Granville, what was his name?
Grantland Rice.
Grantland Rice.
Mm-hmm. The Four Horsemen.
Yeah. And coincidentally, Grantland Rice and Mooney were good friends, and Rice used to come to Murfreesboro, where he was originally from,
mm-hmm.
and at this time he was already a writer in Nashville for the newspaper, but he would come to Mooney's football practices mm-hmm. to just learn more about the game, and evidently told Mooney that he could learn more here watching him and listening to him than some of the other places he could have gone anywhere, I suppose, he wanted to go. But Grantland Rice and Mooney were good friends. So we've got a marker on Grantland Rice's childhood home. So you're right. We ought to have one maybe on the one place here in Murfreesboro that we can identify with Mooney.
Has anybody else written any biographies at all on Mooney? Are you the only one that's ever done that? Because he's such an interesting man, mm-hmm. I cannot imagine.
No, I'm sure I've run across it in all of my research, so mm-hmm. this would be the only one. I got a lot of my research at Battleground Academy. They have wonderful archives, and they had mostly stuff about him and his era there at mm-hmm. BGA, but they did have some information from later years, where evidently someone else was inquiring about him because he was the founder of their school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I read a letter from a daughter of his that was written in the 1950s,
mm-hmm.
well after he had left there. So there was some other information of later life. Another interesting thing about him was that he went down to Louisiana, and the Tabasco sauce people, who is that? Their name is on the bottle. He was the tutor for their children on an island where they mined the salt that is used in that Tabasco sauce, and he brought several blacks from Clarksville
mm-hmm.
Down there, and 50 years later he wrote to the president of that Tabasco sauce company mm-hmm. and inquired about some of those blacks that he had taken down there to help them find work. It was, mm-hmm. I think, a mutually beneficial thing for the blacks to find work and for the company to find people that that could work.
This is so interesting. I think we need to stretch this show out another 3 or 4 hours. I want to let you know that part of the show has been brought to you by Gold and Coin Connection, 2568 South Church Street, and that's beside Gateway Tire Center in the Strip Mall. And the owners are Pastor Larry Dunn from ERO Ministry and partners Chris Chico and Wayne Eberly. And they buy scrap gold, jewelry, platinum, coins, and silverware, and they have vintage sport collectibles and even some great antiques. And if you go in there real soon, you can even lay away for Christmas. And for a fair and honest evaluation of your collectibles, take them by and see Pastor Larry Dunn and his partners today. And that's at the Gold and Coin Connection at 2568 South Church Street, or give them a call at 890-2646.
Get a magical deal on fixing your hail-damaged vehicle. Dent Magic will give you a $100 gift card for Christmas shopping for every repair. Couldn't you use the extra cash and get your hail damage fixed? Dent Magic will repair your vehicle in 2 days without drilling holes. They've got an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau and will even pay your deductible. Some restrictions apply. Oh, did I mention Dent Magic will give you a $100 gift card for Christmas shopping for every repair? Dent Magic, 1 mile west of Coles on Old Fort Parkway in the old fire station. Dent Magic, the industry leader in paintless dent repair at hailmagic.com.
Southeastern Tire of Murfreesboro has the right tires for your vehicle. Perhaps you're a rugged individual who enjoys off-roading. They have a tire for you. Or maybe you're a rap star driving around on 26-inch rims. They have a tire for that. You're a mom who's in the carpool lane daily. They have a tire for your minivan. Let's say you're a wealthy trial lawyer who drives a Lamborghini. Yes, they have a tire for you too. Maybe you drive one of those new electric vehicles. Hey, they have a tire for you. Southeastern Tire Service has a tire for every personality. They're on Broad Street, a tire or two away from Chevy of Murfreesboro.
You've known him for years. Now you can visit with him every day. It's The Truman Show, continuing right now on WGNS, AM and FM.
Welcome back. We have a couple of minutes, Matt. And you were telling me about a book that you edited. And it's about a lady, Nancy Ward, who was...
Nancy Ward was called the Beloved Woman of the Cherokee. That was a title that rarely was bestowed upon any woman, but if they got it, then they were entitled to sit with the chieftains in their tribal council meetings. Wow. And having such little time to talk about her, I'll just give you a little background on the book. It was written in 1957 by a lady doing genealogy work. Mm-hmm. This one is called Nancy Ward, Military and Genealogical Records of the Famous Indian Woman of Tennessee. And she probably only made 100 copies in mimeograph, and I just thought that it needs wider distribution. So I retyped the entire book and added footnotes. One thing she had not done was explain when she said something about such and such river or town, they no longer exist. They've been changed names and so forth. So I looked them up and identified them and footnoted them and people that she would mention. That turns out that they're pretty important people, but she just has the name in there. Mm-hmm. So I call it authored by Annie Walker Burns, and this, the third edition, edited and annotated by Henry Matthew Ward. I was looking for a relationship between Nancy Ward and my wards. There are a lot of coincidental things, and we may yet be related. A lot of our first names, Bryant, John, so forth, were in her immediate family, but I just couldn't find the missing link. So I still don't know for sure as far as my own wards are concerned. But I have published the book so that anyone else, and there are a lot of wards in the Cherokee Nation, because her husband, Bryant Ward, had a son named John, who was called Jack Ward, and he married into the Cherokee Nation too, and was the progenitor of a lot of wards. And I've sold a lot of these books to people that their names are in here. There's an index of about 1,700 surnames,
wow.
I believe. So
that's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It's been an absolute joy having you on today, Matt.
Appreciate it.
It's very interesting. I could just sit here and listen forever. Just bring me some pie and some milk, and I'll be happy.
Yeah, it's blueberry pie.
Yeah, blueberry pie.
Now, that's an inside joke.
Yeah,
there's about 10 stories or poems about blueberry pies in there, and you'd have to read the book to understand why.
My cousin Angie McFarland Clino would love to hear that. You know, she's the one who's got the big blueberry farm out my way off Manchester Pike back up through there. Well, it's been another great week, and we will see you again Monday, and I hope you have a great weekend.